Hello, everyone, and welcome back to The Ambibulous, a show where we discuss a variety of topics regarding alcohol. From specific beer styles, distillation, the brewing process, wine, spirits, and even a history of certain liquor laws, there's a fascinating world to explore. On today's episode, we kick off part one of our IPA special, where we discuss various types of IPAs. Joining me today is Dylan Schaefer, owner of Dialectic Brewing Company here in Mandan, North Dakota. I am your host, Connor Brecky. Let's all raise a glass to the Ambibulous. All right, everybody, we are back with a special episode for you today. I am joined again with Mr. Dylan Schaefer, and today we are going to kick off a special series. It is our IPA series today. We're going to run down kind of a history of the IPA and some modern styles that are kind of widely available everywhere.
And I think an IPA is a good one to cover too, because it is really ubiquitous with the craft beer world today. I mean, it kind of started gaining popularity in, honestly, probably in the 1990s around the States, and has really held true as a mainstay style for a lot of breweries, a lot of craft breweries. The style does date back a lot farther than that. So the IPA, for those who don't know, is the India Pale Ale. And it gets its name from right around the late 1700s, around 1780. All those who were British individuals in India were looking for one of their paler beers. So they were successfully exporting beer to India at the time. And a lot of those beers were your porters, your darker, maltier beers. And they were looking for something lighter, crisper, more refreshing to import to the hot India weather. And their solution to doing that was basically taking a classic British pale ale and cranking the hops up on it and cranking the alcohol up on it a little bit. So it wasn't necessarily that much more alcoholic than some of the other beers they were exporting. Just the alcohol act as a natural preservative in a lot of the styles they exported. But hops being a natural preservative were another good way to kind of make sure that beer could make the six-month voyage all the way over to India. So that was kind of the start of the style. Again, it was originally a British style of beer. So anytime you see on the market today, if you see like an English IPA, that's going to be a little bit more close to what you would have seen on a traditional IPA. So again, that was kind of came into practice in the late 1700s and really gained popularity in the 1800s. The style kind of fell by the wayside for quite a while. And then as the United States craft beer market kind of started picking up, which was really in kind of the late 1970s is when American craft beer started to become a thing again. And so that's where we saw the IPA kind of gain a resurgence in the United States. At the time in Great Britain, they weren't really brewing IPAs at all. It had fallen by the wayside, and new American craft brewers wanted to kind of bring back some of those traditional styles, the IPA being one of those. And of course, being Americans, we did kind of take our own twist with that. So a lot of the classic IPAs, again, were using some more English hop varietals, some just European hop varietals in general. And the Americans kind of found that the style of beer was really well suited for the varieties of hops we were growing out in the Yakima Valley. You get a lot of those nice piney, fruity characteristics from the American hops, and it went really well in a nice pale beer. So that's where we saw kind of the U.S. start to pick up the style of the IPA. And since then, it kind of has gone all over the map with the different types of IPAs you can find out there. So the classic American IPA is going to be what we see as a West Coast IPA today. So you got a lot more of those kind of piney and citrusy hop characteristics from those West Coast hops. And that was kind of the start of IPAs in the United States, was those West Coast IPAs. And then the popularity of that style kind of started traveling east and eventually took over the country and the whole world again, honestly. But then we started seeing some pretty significant variance on that American IPA or that West Coast IPA. So we started seeing things like Heady Topper as kind of regarded as the first ever New England IPA to pop up. And for those who don't know, a New England IPA, it's going to be the same thing as a hazy IPA or a juicy IPA. Whatever the brewery chooses to market the beer as, they're all kind of within that same realm of a New England IPA. The hazy IPA, juicy IPA, any IPA, it's all going to be the same thing. And the idea with those was most of your West Coast IPAs were pretty highly bittered. So you were sitting right along the bitterness scale is the IBU rating. And that's going to be a rating. It actually goes from 0 to 1,000. But the human palate can't detect much more than 100. So a lot of your West Coast IPAs sat around that 75 to 100 range. And the brewers at Alchemist Brewing Company, who came out with the Heady Topper, they kind of wanted to make something that was a little bit more approachable. So they brought the bitterness way down closer to like 20 IBUs. And they dry hopped it more heavily. And that heavy dry hopping at a certain point during fermentation gives you a really juicy hop character, really kind of tropical, fruity hop character. And they found that to be a very desirable characteristic in beer. The flip side is that brewing practice also introduced a bunch of haze into the beer. So that's where you see the development of those hazy IPAs. In addition to the hazy IPAs, people also started doing their milkshake IPAs, where they started kind of brewing a hazy IPA and then adding a whole bunch of lactose and fruit and stuff like that to it. We also saw folks start brewing the Belgian IPAs, where they were brewing a classic American IPA recipe, but fermenting it out with Belgian yeast to give it some of those kind of fruity esters in there from the yeast as well. We also see our Imperial IPAs, and or also known as a double IPA. For those of you who see a DIPA up on a tap list somewhere or an IIPA, that second I is just standing for Imperial IPA. And that Imperial pretty much just means that it's a higher alcohol content. So instead of being that kind of 6% to 7% range, they were up there closer to 8, 9, 10%. I've seen them all the way up to 11, 12, 13% as well. So, and we do have right now, Connor and I are sipping on a couple examples of IPAs that I have on the board right now. The first one is actually a Smash IPA. And for those who don't know what that SMASH stands for, it's a single malt and single hop. So it's basically just base malt and then one particular hop to really showcase what that hop character is. And so the one I have on tap right now is actually a Citra Hop SMASH IPA.
And then I'll probably say this a few times on the show, but I don't dislike IPAs. I'm just kind of not used to them. I'm still hunting for the right one. And so far, most of the ones out here at Dialectic I've been, you know, keen to. This one, I really love this one. I think I've ordered this one a few times now, but it's got a really great, well-rounded flavor. And then you don't get that just strong bitterness. You can actually taste the floral essence of like the hops and everything, like all the things that I feel like you kind of miss out on with like a super crazy bitter IPA. I mean, to each their own, but that's just my personal take on them.
Absolutely. And I think the Citra hop is a really good hop to use for a little bit more of an approachable IPA. It does have a whole lot of flavor and a whole lot of character, but Citra has a notoriously smooth bitterness. So this beer is up there at 75 IBUs. So it is fairly bitter on that scale. But the bitterness is such a smooth bitterness that it's not just punching you in the face with piney bitterness. And you get a lot of those nice kind of stone fruit, some tropical fruit, and some citrus fruit characteristics from that pretty heavy addition of dry hopping with Citra in there as well. So I do think that that hop in general can be a really approachable hop for folks. And the second beer that we're sampling to our second IPA that's on the list right now is actually a fruited Belgian IPA. So it is fermented with Belgian yeast, but it's fermented at a really, really low ale temperature. And that lower temperature keeps some of those Belgian esters restrained a little bit and just contributes kind of a light fruitiness to the beer. And then it is brewed with a whole bunch of pink guava puree. So this batch I did, for my system here, it was a small batch. I just did a 100-gallon batch of this beer, and it does get 200 pounds of pink guava added to that 100-gallon batch. So a dose of about 2 pounds of guava per every gallon of beer. And it doesn't, I like when I brew fruited beers that to not cover up the character of the beer with the fruit. So you definitely know it's got that guava in there. You pick up that guava flavor, but it doesn't totally dominate the hop character of the beer either.
And this guava one is really good too. It's a bit different from the Smash IPA. I noticed, well, just looking at these two in front of me, I have the Smash IPA in my left hand, and it is a brilliant golden, it's just a really nice golden clear color. And then not to say anything bad about the other one, but it's a little more hazy, little, kind of looks like a lemonade or a shandy, but it's still really good. And you can definitely taste the difference in smoothness. The guava one's got, I don't want to say it tastes creamy, but it's got kind of a cream-like characteristic to it compared to the Smash IPA.
It does. The body and the mouthfeel of those, of the two beers are very, very different. That the guava has, like you said, much more of a creamy, smooth mouthfeel to it. And at the same rate, the bitterness on it, although it's 76 IBU, so only one IBU more than the Citra, the bitterness is a little bit sharper on the guava IPA. And again, that's mainly a hop difference. So this one has a lot of Cascade, Centennial, which are going to be some really classic West Coast hops. And then in addition to that, it's also got some more English hop varietals as late additions, giving it kind of a really nice floral hop character in there. Yeah, but, and I think those are two kind of really good examples of how I like to tell people not to be scared away from IPAs, because there is a huge variety of different IPAs available out there. These beers that we're drinking right now are very, very different from each other. And I actually have a hazy IPA or a New England IPA down in the fermenter right now that'll be coming on tap next week. And that one, again, is very, very different than the two we're having right now. So you can find a huge variety of IPAs out there. And for folks that are new to craft beer, that are looking to get out there and get into the IPA world a little bit, you know, I recommend starting maybe with some of your milkshake IPAs, your hazy IPAs, your fruited IPAs. They're going to be a little bit more mellow on the palate and just a little bit more approachable. And then the West Coast IPAs definitely being a little more aggressive, a little sharper, a little more bitter in general.
I would have to say, personally, as a sour person, I really enjoy the milkshake IPAs. They're just, I don't know, they're fun, I guess, because the different fruit flavors and all the wild kind of stuff I've seen people do with them. Those have been kind of my go-to, and I'm still trying to branch out. But every time I come here, it's like, oh, new IPA, cool. This one I like. It's nice to have a variety, because I'm so used to, you know, before craft beer really kind of took off, it was just, here's something that tastes like a pine cone. Here you go. It's like, I'll pass.
And that was the world of IPAs for the longest time in the U.S. anyway, were West Coast IPAs. And we do brew a West Coast IPA that's it's called the Pine Cone Graveyard. And it is a very piney, it's 100 IBU piney, classic example of a traditional West Coast style. But like you said, it's nice to have the variety out there, especially with how popular IPAs have become. We don't want to see a tap lineup with just 30 different West Coast IPAs up there. You know, it's nice to have an actual variety of IPAs, especially when you see some brewers out there who you go into their tap room and their lineup of 12 beers has 8 or 9 different IPAs on it. And every single one of them is a very unique beer. And I will say on your note too, Connor, that those, the milkshake IPAs are hugely, hugely popular right now. It almost seems like the hazy IPAs, the New England IPAs, were a big trend for a little while, and that kind of morphed into the milkshake IPA, where they were brewing a hazy and then adding that lactose and heavy fruit additions. And those have become hugely, hugely popular in the market today. Odds are, if you find a brewery who's got IPAs on tap, you're going to see a milkshake on the board.
Yeah, I've kind of noticed that. I've kind of noticed that, like, sours, like barrel aged sours. I see more and more places acquiring barrels and doing that. But then at the same time, I've definitely noticed an uptick in the milkshake IPA style, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, it's nice to see the different varieties out there. I'm always happy about that. And I am a little bit of a hophead. I love drinking IPAs. So when I go out to a place and I can try 5, 6, 7 unique IPAs, I'm pretty satisfied with that. And that's not to say that the IPA is a style that should dominate the craft beer industry. There are a lot of really, really great styles out there, but I think the IPA is not going to go away anytime soon. It's been in the market since the late 1970s, honestly, in the US. And for a beer style to hold that much importance for that long in the craft beer industry, I think we can safely say that it isn't going to be going anywhere as a general style.
Yeah, it's like rock and roll. It's not going away anytime soon.
Exactly. And you have, again, with so many varieties, why would it go away? Because no matter what the beer drinker is, they're going to find an IPA to fit them. I mean, one I forgot to mention is the black IPA. So for the folks who like something a little bit darker and a little bit maltier, you can venture into the black IPAs that have, you know, in my mind, they're kind of the best of both worlds. You get that really nice, rich, malty character, some good roasty coffee and chocolate notes to it, but then also a good punch of hops in there as well. So, but yeah, I mean, I think that pretty well generally covers the style of IPA. Again, I gave a very truncated version of the history of the style, but it is a really unique style. It has some really great historical significance when it comes to the beer industry, and especially the resurgence of smaller brewers and craft brewers in the United States and over in Europe as well. So,
yep, folks, the IPA is not going away anytime soon. And if you're afraid of them, like I was, still am, kind of, not really. Just know that there's a bunch of different styles out there. Yeah, I guess location is kind of key. We're just lucky to have a place like Dialectic, and then we have Buffalo Commons and some other places in Bismarck that do local craft beer, and then some liquor stores that carry local stuff too. So I would say next time you're just out and about, maybe look up where you might be able to find one of these. Maybe you got a liquor store that has craft beer. There's a lot of that coming out into the market. North Dakota's brew scene has taken off tremendously in the last 3 years, so maybe you can find something that you might like. And if you don't like it, well, down the drain it goes, or pass it on to somebody else. But there's a big world out there.
If you're drinking craft beer with friends and you don't like the IPA you got, odds are you can probably pawn it off on a friend.
Yep, exactly.
And I think you had a good point too, Connor, with location kind of being everything. Obviously for folks who are located out on the East Coast, you are going to see a lot more of the New England and hazy IPAs, and that's great. Folks located out on the West Coast, you're going to see the market a lot more dominated by those classic West Coast IPAs. Being right here in the Midwest, we kind of take brewing influence from all over the place. And at least I know around the Bismarck-Mandan area, you can pretty much find any kind of hoppy beer you're looking for represented in the Bismarck-Mandan area here.
Yeah, we have a liquor store called Willikers in Bismarck, kind of on the far east end of it, that has a pretty impressive selection of craft beer. A lot of it's North Dakota, too. Like, you get a lot from, like, I've seen Junkyard and Fargo. I've seen, like, Rhombus Guys and a bunch of other stuff over there, too, in can form. And then they do have a tap room where you can, well, you don't sit down and drink. It's basically a growler fill station. So they have 10 of them.
Yep.
You can look up online and check it out.
And on that note, and speaking of IPAs and speaking of Willikers, I got a little inside message today that Junkyard does have a van showing up at Willikers today for a fresh delivery. So if you're feeling like grabbing some Junkyard beer while you're here, Connor, it's probably not a bad time to do it, because they will have a fresh stockpile over there at Willikers.
I think I know what I'm doing.
It's convenient knowing some folks in the craft beer industry, you know, when all those drops are coming.
Yeah. Well, folks, we kind of got a good little history of what an IPA is, some knowledge on common styles of IPAs and the flavor profiles. So the only thing left to do is drink one yourself. So I would say come on down to Dialectic whenever you get a chance. They have a really good selection on their board. Very diverse, very interesting if you're new to it, and get yourself a pint.
We'd love to have you down here.
So until next time, cheers. The Ambibulous is made possible with Castos, giving creators the tools to connect with their audience and community. The music is courteous of Pond 5, with over 25 million royalty-free stock videos, music, photos, and sound effects. There's something for every creator. Today's content was recorded here at Dialectic Brewing Company in Mandan, North Dakota. I would like to thank Dylan Schaefer for the use of his facility and time to create this episode. And of course, a big thanks to all our listeners for all of your support. Until next time, cheers.